The business news of the nation, region, and the greater Des Moines Metro made possible through the support of Creamer Law Firm. Business law and estate planning, visit creamerlaw.com. And AARP of Iowa, real possibilities for our community and our citizens, no matter the age, aarp.org.
Now, welcome back to the Business News Hour for a Monday afternoon. With us in studio is Sam Creamer of the Creamer Law Firm. And when he suggested this topic that we talk about today on the Business News Hour, I was all over this because I think this is really important stuff, because so many of us are asked to serve on nonprofit boards and organizations, and it's really good to know what our responsibilities are as a nonprofit board member. So that's what we're going to talk about. No good deed goes unpunished. Sam, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
So this is really, as I said in that run-up, this is important stuff, because I think a lot of people want to do good. They want to help nonprofits or whatever organization they belong to, but oftentimes they don't know all of those responsibility levels.
Michael, a lot of us belong to those organizations. At the Creamer Law Firm, we've been fortunate enough to be involved with the Chamber of Commerce of West Des Moines. We've been involved with the Chamber of Commerce of Windsor Heights. We've been a Small Business of the Year. I've served on many boards. And I think that it's really important that people know that there's more to a board than simply writing a check. The starting point for all of this is, how does one get on a board? Well, there's always the argument of a check. My grandfather, who's gone, used to say, a check doesn't make you any less welcome either.
It's very true. But many times people are just asked, or they'll sometimes volunteer. And sometimes checks aren't even involved.
Oftentimes checks are not involved because the people that are being solicited have either a talent that people are looking for, they've got connections, or they've got just an interest and a vibe that really makes them useful to the organization. But technically, under the law, a member of the board of directors is elected by the membership.
Right.
So technically, there should be some type of election procedure. Now, whether that's a hand vote or whether that's, you know, a secret ballot or just how that's done depends in large measure on the bylaws of the actual organization. But the technical requirement is that a nonprofit should have a board of directors, and the board of directors is elected by the members. Now, the board of directors is ultimately charged with the overall operation of the entity, just like a board of directors of a corporation is overall charged with the operation of a business. However, the board of directors commonly delegates all or part of its responsibilities to someone else. So although a board of directors technically may be responsible for the operations of a nursing home, that doesn't mean that each board member is supposed to make sure that each patient gets the right dosage of their medicine. What it does is it says that the board members are supposed to be making overall policy. The board is really designed to make strategic decisions, not tactical decisions.
Correct.
Now, what are those kinds of decisions? Those kind of decisions might involve finances. Those decisions do involve personnel. Those decisions may involve overall types of purpose for the entity.
The mission.
The mission statement is ultimately what should guide a nonprofit. Everything that a nonprofit does should be measured in comparison to its compliance or its divergence from the mission statement of the entity.
And many boards, quite frankly, may not know what their mission is, or the board members. And so one of the things that I know that many boards that I've sat on or been part of or executive director of, we take great pains in bringing those board members up to speed with regard to what the mission is and what the bylaws say.
That's sometimes referred to as board training.
Yes.
There is really no substitute for an efficient board to be trained. It allows people to understand all the mechanics of the entity, what their role is, and how they can best fulfill that role, and overall, then, how to fulfill the mission of the entity.
Sam, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, and some people don't understand, is that the board members, individual board members, really have no authority at all. They speak as the board, don't they? They can't direct traffic, in other words.
The board is a board. A director is a director. The board acts normally by majority vote of the directors. Directors individually only have the authority that's granted to them either by resolutions or by the bylaws. So accordingly, it is a groupthink situation. It is not an individual thing. On the other hand, it is very common for boards to have disagreements. Mm-hmm. And those disagreements should be recorded, memorialized in minutes, and it should be referenced as to who voted which way on the issue. And the reason for that is a director really cannot be held responsible for anything that they voted against. Now, if you don't have minutes that show who voted which way, there's no way to tell that. The responsibilities of a director are not just to write a check or to show up. A board of directors must exercise their authority, first of all, in good faith. Now, good faith is obviously a somewhat nebulous term, and it really means that they've got to actually have an absence of bad faith. They've got to try hard to be doing things that are in accordance with the mission statement of the entity and in the best interests of the entity. The second requirement...
So sometimes personal gain shouldn't be thought of.
Personal gain should almost invariably be excluded. There are actually specific provisions in the Iowa statute involving personal gain, and those are the conflict of interest situations. Basically, a conflict of interest is one where a director has a direct or indirect interest in the transaction. Now, if the director discloses their interest in the transaction, discloses all the terms and conditions of the transaction, and the board votes for it anyway, well, then the director has a much, much, much lower responsibility for any type of self-dealing. I think it's also very important to note that the statute immunizes people from transactions that are ultimately good deals for the company. So, as an example, if you're running a homeless shelter, and the entity decides it wants to lease the property from one of the board members, and the board member gives them a below market rate. Well, yes, it's a self-dealing transaction.
But no harm, no foul on that.
But
right?
No harm, no foul.
Yeah, okay. Should a board member, if they have a personal interest in whatever the board is dealing with, should they abstain from the vote?
The best is not only to abstain, but also declare. And it's very important that they disclose to the board what their interest is, and how this impacts them. Now, Michael, a second thing that a board member has to do as they take care of their responsibilities is they've got to act in the best interests of the entity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a little bit closer call, because sometimes not doing something can be in the best interests of an entity, and sometimes doing it is in the best interest. That's oftentimes where board members disagree. But provided, quite frankly, everybody has good intent, I think that it's going to be very easy to say that, yeah, I was trying to do the right thing. So therefore, yes, I was trying to act in the best interest of the entity. Now, there are two more requirements that get a little trickier. First of all, a board member has to act in the way a person in similar circumstances would reasonably believe to be appropriate.
What does that mean?
What that means, actually, is that you've got to do more than just vote yes or no. And that's kind of the second part of the same test. A board member has to actually make some inquiry into the facts and circumstances surrounding what they're voting on. It's not enough to just show up. If there's an agenda, you should know what's on the agenda. If the agenda items are of very large importance, you should do a little investigation. Now, you yourself don't have to become a lawyer. You don't have to become a CPA. You can rely on the lawyer and CPA for the entity. You can rely on the officers of the entity to give you good information. But the point is, you probably ought to do something a little bit more than vote just yes or no.
And just show up. Open the board packet before you get there.
Arguably, that's one of the biggest differences between a not-for-profit board member and a corporate board member. Iowa law does provide some responsibility for a corporate board member to do some investigation and to be knowledgeable about what they're doing. On the other hand, in a corporate setting, they have to act in good faith. They have to not receive a personal benefit, those kinds of things. But there's no even slight duty to investigate. I would tell you that the reason for that is that a nonprofit entity is a lot more similar to a trust. It's not a trust. It's a corporation. It has a board. But the people who are contributing to this, the people who are involved in this, are depending on the board members to act in sort of a quasi-fiduciary type capacity. Mm-hmm. They are not fiduciaries. I'm arguing that that's sort of how it's viewed, not a technical definition that they are fiduciaries.
One of the things that I'm often asked in the boards or the groups that I've been affiliated with over the years is about the legal the legal issues that surround being a board member, responsibilities relative to the law, and can they be held accountable for votes and decisions that they make?
There can be personal responsibility for board members. But before I talk much more about that, the thing I want to emphasize is each entity should have bylaws. And the bylaws ought to be fairly complete. The bylaws ought to talk about who's qualified to be a member. The bylaws ought to talk about the mission of the entity. The bylaws ought to talk about how directors are elected or removed. Mm-hmm. And I think that these types of decisions, oftentimes these legal decisions, are attributed back to the bylaws or attributed to the state law. Now, as to responsibilities, personal responsibilities, again, unlike a corporate director, the Iowa law does provide some immunity for members of boards for nonprofit entities. First of all, there is no liability for a transaction that was fair at the time it was entered into, even if it turns out not to be so good for the entity at the back end. Second, there can be liability if a director has some kind of financial interest that is undisclosed. Mm. It really is much more about money than stupidity. It's much more about theft than indiscretion. Finally, a director can have personal liability if there's a business opportunity that the entity could have taken on, but the board member didn't first bring it to the board and have the board decide whether the entity wanted to do it or not. Now, what does that mean? Again, let's use a homeless shelter. And let's say that a property comes available to a board member that the board member might like to renovate and make into apartments. Well, this property might also be able to be a homeless shelter. Mm. So the question is, does the board member have to present it to the board for its determination as to whether it wants to participate, or can the board member just take that opportunity for themselves? Well, I would argue that the Iowa law, and quite honestly, just fair dealing and good judgment, would say that the board member at least should bring it to the attention of the board, and that there should be a determination by the board, again with written minutes, as to whether or not the entity wanted to engage in that activity.
Got it. It's not all just show up, is it?
People join boards, as you said, because they want to better the community. Sure. Or they believe in the cause. But that doesn't mean they just join the board. They have some responsibilities too. And as they exercise their board authority, they have some rules that they have to follow and responsibilities that they have to fulfill.
What happens, though, if the board is acting illegally? If there's something going on, embezzlement, some illegal activity that runs counter to the statutes,
if a board member is actually involved in that, of course, the board member has personal responsibility for that. If a board member is assaulting a nurse in a nursing home, well, you can't say I'm a board member.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. I mean, so that's one issue. If the board is actually actively acting illegally, then the question becomes, did the board member know?
No.
But also the question is, did they have reason to know? Should they have investigated? So let's take an example which may or may not occur in a not-profit. Let's say the controller was failing to pay over the withholding tax on employees of the entity. Well, the board might not know about that because that's not something that would come before the board. And if the controller is lying about it to the board, i.e. not telling the board.
They don't know.
Not telling the board of the problem, which is called a lie of omission. So, you know, then the board would not be liable. On the other hand, if the board says, you know, we're just not going to admit people with XYZ qualifications. We just decided we don't want people like this or that.
With a brown eye and a green eye.
Brown eye, green eye, you know.
Whatever.
I mean, you can see where I'm going with this. Some type of impermissible discriminatory practice. Mm-hmm. Then I think that there can be liability because I think that's contrary to law.
And if the board says to the controller on this case, you know, we're running a little short of cash, should we always have to pay those withholding taxes?
The answer is absolutely yes. And not only is it an illegal activity,
right,
but withholding taxes are one of the few taxes that there is personal responsibility for board members, whether that's a not-profit or a for-profit company.
Lots of things to remember. It's just not saying yes and showing up. It's a lot of work involved with being an effective and interested board member. With the Creamer Law Firm, you guys set up organizations like this?
We certainly do. We help with the bylaws. We help with the obtaining nonprofit tax status, the 501c3 status. And I think it's important to note that the two are interrelated, but not exactly the same. Right. One could certainly be a nonprofit corporation before they receive their certification from the Internal Revenue Service. We're always glad to help. We believe very strongly in the community, and we believe very strongly that these nonprofits overall form a very, very important part of our society and an important function that supplements what each of us would like to do individually, but are somehow just best done collectively.
Got it. Sam Creamer, ladies and gentlemen, from the Creamer Law Firm. No good deed goes unpunished. I like the title of that. It's responsibilities and issues that revolve around being a board member in a not-for-profit. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Always good stuff. All right, we've got to have to step aside, find out what happened today on Wall Street. Speaking of good news, Sam, markets were up today. Guess what left the front page of the paper? North Korea. That's next.